pair of headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Which usually means he wants to participate in the conversation.
Well, he can't.
Right. Put them away. Go home.
Yeah.
All right. So did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I was only going to talk about the fact that Colin doesn't have to be here all day long wearing the skirt like you and I do.
No, I would be like going lots of other places. If I had the man, if I had a man's skirt, I guarantee you, I would go to the state capitol. I would go places where people could see me in my man's skirt.
Oh, all right.
You know, whereas you guys are probably power inside here at the off-world colony.
Damn right. You got it. Right in the office, as a matter of fact.
The off-world colony.
No, I mean, the whole point of having a man's skirt, I would think, would be to be seen in it. As many places as possible. I was wondering, if you can get me a man's skirt, all right, forget about you two guys. If you don't want to wear a man's skirt, that's fine. If you can,
I told you I would do a Colin.
Bobby, if you can get
man's
skirts for as many of us as will wear them, I promise you, not only that, but I will go out after work. I will go to, like, the elbow room or someplace that, and I will sit there on a stool in my man's skirt,
right,
letting everybody have a whole big Sharon Stone.
But look at the evolution of this building. Joe D is now thinking of taking yoga, and we're thinking of wearing man's skirts.
Yeah.
We've come a long way.
Yeah. They're pumping estrogen into the drinking fountain. Anyway, we're here, and we'd love to take your phone calls. We have a few guests coming up here. Kerry Sheinberg, angry and bitter Olympic skier, will join us towards the end of the show to talk about sports and a few other topics. I think she has some. She's also upset about the way American Idol is unfolding right now, the American Idol crisis. But we'll talk about other stuff as well. Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. You know, Troy is an example of why it's useful to be culturally ignorant.
I have to look at some first before you can be allowed to talk about Troy.
What's that?
I think it would be only fair to look at the roster today that's been prepared for us by Mr. Sal Haney, after yesterday's successful suggestion of talking about American Idol for
his other topic. I think he would approve of talking about Troy.
Okay.
But here's why it's useful to be culturally ignorant, because you can go to see Troy and you don't know who wins. You know, you can just be sitting there going, I wonder which side is going to win. Whereas I had to slog through the Iliad, which depressed me infinitely, reading the Iliad, because would it be okay with the listeners if I actually did mention who does win? Because it's sort of common. It is sort of common now.
I would think it would be. It's not like it's a secret.
No, all right. So basically, I always root for the underdog. I got about, 20 lines into the Iliad, and I thought, well, Troy should win, because they're really outgunned here. And also, Hector is by far the most appealing person in the Iliad. Hector is just, he's there, he's very masculine, he's, he wears a man's skirt, but not, he doesn't wear like a, Donna Karen man's skirt. And there's something very nicely self-contained about Hector. So I liked him the most, and it just bugged, because I knew, reading the Iliad, I knew who was going to lose.
Nicely self-contained?
How about Hector, yeah.
Are you referring to,
well, who he is. He's not a...
All right. You're not talking about this in a physical sense.
He's not a braggart. He's not arrogant. But yet he's a great warrior. He's a great hero. My suspicion has always been that Helen secretly was wishing that she was with Hector, not with Paris. But I don't know if that gets unfolded at all in the movie tonight. But anyway, it's very depressing watching the whole thing. Troy's going down. And you think, it's like being a Red Sox fan.
Right. Yeah.
You know they're going to lose. It makes you so sad.
Still for years on end, you're still in there hoping.
Actually, Yaz was a very Hector-like figure when you think about it. Some interesting parallels could be drawn between Karl Yastrzemski and Hector. But I'm too tired to do it right now. 522-WTIC, if you'd like to do it for us. 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. And we can put Dan on the air, but I don't actually have any tickets to that. I mean, people have offered me tickets to the Connecticut Forum, and we should talk about Buddy and say this, but remind me to have another conversation on the air about this article I read about the influentials. But anyway, Rush believes that people go to seminars to learn how to sort of spew a certain canned liberal line on his show, and he calls them seminar callers. Well, I don't think that necessarily counts as a full-blown Buddy Vucevic wig out. At minimum...
Well, what do you want? I mean...
Well, first of all, I mean, if...
does there have to be a tower involved in this? And
I think if the Farmington Fire Department isn't here with a hook and ladder... to me, that's the sort of watermark, That's the sine qua non.
hook and ladder.
It's going to have to, even a pumper is not going to be enough. There's going to be a hook and ladder involved, or a cherry picker, one or the other,
yep,
to get Buddy off of some, you know.
All right, guys. Thank
you, Buddy. If there are no sirens, it certainly is, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, just very quickly, maybe I can mention this. There are almost no interesting articles being written about politics anymore anyway, for obvious reasons. But there's an article in the Washington Post that referred, in fact, to a book. And the concept is the influential. And the idea is that people have gotten to a point where they don't listen to you, and they don't listen to me, they don't listen to Buddy, they don't listen to Paul Begala, they don't listen to Pat Buchanan. There's just too many of voices like that coming at them. But who they do listen to are people in their own community who, in one way or another, in a very quiet way, without any particular portfolio or licensure or anything like that, have kind of made themselves influential. You know, it's the guy who sends emails to 10 of his friends every single day. The woman who is a great caller to two or three different talk shows. Just the kind of people who manage to kind of cut through all that stuff and persuade the people around them, and who get listened to by 10, 15, 20 people around them, but also like create kind of an echo effect.
From Gannon, for example.
Okay, Ron from Gannon would be the opposite. If you wanted to sort of understand something through understanding its opposite, Ron from Gannon would be an example. Ron might be an influential. He's a very articulate guy, and and he has nothing better to do with his life. He either has inherited wealth or is just sitting in poverty in his own urine or something. And I don't know which one it is, but maybe he's an influential. I don't know.
Everybody, girls, you know you got 'em. Big legs, everybody, you're the only one for me.
I can't remember where I read this, but I read somewhere that T. Billy Hutchinson was the inspiration for that song. She was getting a blues musician back then. But I'm not 100% sure that's correct. Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. Actually, I've heard who is going to be indicted, and I've heard the same thing from a bunch of different sources, but I don't necessarily believe stuff like that, because there is an echo effect on rumors like that. But I do want to say, well, maybe we should take Norberto, and then we'll... By the way, I want to say one thing about the Manskirts. Yeah. Bill Heald, the gentleman biker, would also join us in wearing a manskirt. I've received some communication from him.
That's great.
Well. So if we have manskirt day, we'll need three. And possibly a fourth if you decide to. With your new svelte figure, I can't imagine why you
don't. Right, yeah.
You've lost a ton of weight. You really have.
I still have a lot more to lose.
It might not be exactly the time yet to go manskirt.
No, I don't think it is.
All right.
That was my point.
Yeah. All right.
Someday,
Someday. It's a dream worth having, anyway.
Yeah.
If you get a dream, like wearing a manskirt, and the guts to pursue it, it'll come true.
I mean, I thought it was a tremendous leap here, this funky hair thing and all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This whole thing with putting the product in every day?
Yeah.
You have got it going on. All right, let's start
a little color in there, too.
Yeah. Color? You're coloring your hair?
There's a little in there, yeah.
You're coloring your hair?
I put a little in there, yeah.
You are coloring your hair?
I didn't do it. The hair person
you
did it.
You are coloring your hair?
Well, just a little teeny bit.
You are coloring your hair? I'm just trying with stressing different words.
Right.
So, but you continue to color your hair.
Continued. I never did it before.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, since the hair person,
that would be my buddy Angel.
Yeah.
Put the stuff in there. Yeah.
And so you've continued to put it in.
I went to the person that does my hair, and I said he had a little bit of color in there.
Yeah.
And people said they liked that little bit of color in there. So could you put that in? So she put in a little bit.
Well, aren't you Mr. Metrosexual?
No, just a little bit. It's like you can barely notice.
No, but it's got a different vibe. You've got a different sort of.
Yeah.
Kind of a Fabian thing going on.
Oh, that's so hip.
All right.
Fabian.
Let's start to Norberto.
Just like saying, you're so hip, you're like the lead guitar player of the Ventures.
Yeah, exactly. Hi, Norberto.
How you doing?
We're all right. I do feel that a compelling, rational, and sober case can be made for the fact that the president is a moron, but I'm not going to do that today.
I appreciate that very much.
Well, we appreciate your listenership, Norberto. I hope we talk about enough different things, you know, whether we're talking about movies or... You know, another thing I want to talk about today, Norberto, do you go to the movies very often?
Do I see movies very often?
Yeah, do you go to the movie theaters very often?
All the time.
Have you seen the preview yet for the thing, I think it's called Open Water or Clear Water, where the people are just marooned from the boat? They're scuba divers or snorkelers or something like that, and the boat leaves them there. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I did not see the preview, but I read about it.
Yeah, it's in the Wall Street Journal today. There's an article calling it the Blair Fish Project. This is actually a movie that was made for almost nothing. It was shot for, it says here somewhere, it was 80 minutes long. It was shot with a $3,000 digital camera. And
right.
I've never seen a promo that made me, even including Adam Sandler movies, that made me want to watch a movie less than this. I mean, it just looks so upsetting. I mean, apparently, as far as I can tell, it's 80 minutes long. And I think the whole 80 minutes is just the two of them in shark-infested waters.
That's right.
Wondering if they're going to die or not.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Another video they saw from Australia.
Oh, yeah, because, in fact, this is semi-based on a real incident where some people were on some kind of, you know, expedition or something like that, and there was a missed head count on this boat. You know, it's very common it's very common to go out on a boat and go snorkeling or scuba diving or something like that, and then these little tour operators, and they pick you all back up and they take you home. Well, they missed a head count, and they left these people out in the water, you know, miles from anywhere with sharks. Well, if that's the whole movie, it's just the two of them, their heads bobbing up and down over the water, going, oh my god, I just felt something brush my leg, oh my god.
It's safe to assume you're not going to watch this movie.
You couldn't pay me. Yeah, you couldn't. Really, you couldn't pay me. I can't imagine watching that movie. I've turned into the biggest wuss. I didn't used to be like this. But, like, my son and I went to see Godsend on Saturday, I think it was, which is this new movie with Greg Kinnear and that Roman Stamos woman and Robert De Niro. And it's one of those scary kid movies where the kid is scary. And it's one of those movies where basically what they're really working off of is the idea that if anybody else acted like this, you would institutionalize them. But this is your kid. You have to sort of go, oh, well, he is walking around the house with a claw hammer again. But, you know, he's our son. What are we going to do?
Well, that's good. Father and son, a little outing.
But I was so scared. My son is not scared of anything, or at least not scared of anything in the movies. I was writhing in my seat, and I turned into one of those people who goes, oh, my God. You know, every once in a while, somebody, like, jumps out. There's one of those little scary moments where they open a door and, you know, somebody frightening is on the other side or something. I turned into one of these people who writhes in my seat, and I peek through my fingers, and I'm old, and I'm frail, and I'm vulnerable now. And so these scary movies are actually disturbing to me. And my son is now embarrassed to sit next to me. He'll go, shut up.
I kind of know the feeling.
I'm not that much. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go with my daddy, and he's all screaming in his chair.
Yeah, well, there you go. You can go with my son next time, and I'll go with your father. All right, bye.
Thanks very much for accepting my call.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. Well, he was rational.
Yeah.
I'm not used to that.
Yeah. I really have turned into the biggest sissy. I didn't used to be like this. Curry and I went, but we saw 28 Days Later this summer, and he came out of the movie and said, I'm never going to another scary movie with you. Because other movies, I never talk.
He didn't jump into his lap or anything.
Just about. I never talk in movie theaters. I'm an anti-talking in movies person. Like, I'm an extremist. The only exception being, at a scary movie, I cannot help myself. I will yelp with fear.
Oh, well, that's encouraging.
You know, when scary things happen. And I really am at the point where I've had some mild incontinence problems. Bring it up. I cannot imagine watching that movie, Open Water. I cannot imagine it. It hasn't opened yet anyway, but I mean, I saw the previews when we were seeing Godsend last weekend, and I'm thinking, you're kidding me. No. I don't have time to get into this right now, but I do want to say, we're going to talk about it in the next half hour, and if you're bored with Salhaney claims nobody wants to hear anything more about the Roland stuff, and we should talk about American Idol. He's probably right. But, you know, this
God, please don't say that too often.
I heard Mark Ryan on the Roy and Debbie show today, and I really felt like calling in because for him to say, I mean, basically what he said in his testimony yesterday in his press conference afterwards and today on the Roy and Debbie show is that the bonding process in the state of Connecticut is so airtight and so closely vetted that it would be impossible for anybody to taint it with a quid pro quo arrangement. Now, I have to say, in my own estimation, that's the opposite of the truth. It's hard to imagine a process more fungible, more open to screwing around and chicanery than bonding in the state of Connecticut. And I mean, is Mark Ryan prepared to sit there and say that he has never been aware of his boss, John Rowland, let's just say, calling a legislator in and saying, either you vote for or don't vote for this bill that I either like or hate, or, you know, and if you defy me, you're not getting bonding for such and such. I mean, because that's virtually, as far as I can tell, a daily event, a multiple daily event at certain times during in a legislative session. That's what they do all the time. And Moira Lyons and Kevin Sullivan do it too. They threaten people all the time with either not getting their bonding money or they promise people bonding stuff in return for, you know, support of other legislation. I mean, I can't imagine a process that has more give and more take and more play in it than the bonding commission. So for Mark Ryan to say, at least the bonding process, anyway, for Mark Ryan to say there's no way that could happen, and that flies in the face of experience.
I'm done.
Oh, do I have another minute?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what, I mean, you know. I mean, the other thing is, I'm tired of these people being offended by stuff. Like, Mark Ryan, you know, was taking this sort of sniffy attitude on the Roy and Debbie show today and in his press conference yesterday. It was the same one that Chris Cooper said the other day, where he said that it was insulting to suggest that the Rowland administration could possibly be involved in outsourcing prisoners to some Youngstown, Ohio facility just because they're politically wired up to one of his cronies, David O'Leary. You know, these people lost the right to be insulted by stuff about 5 or 6 months ago. You know what? If we found another dead white woman at O.J.'s house, guess what we're going to think? Because O.J.'s kind of used up our patience. And it's the same thing with these people. If we see something that looks kind of funny, Rowland has already admitted to a bunch of stuff. So if we see something else that looks kind of funny, guess what we're going to think? And we've got a right to think that they used up our patience with them a long time ago. Sometimes I thought that song could apply to me to a certain degree, because I'm not very composed. I've actually been engaged in, I shouldn't mention this, but I've been engaged in a dialogue with myself about whether or not I have an inner reality. I had this very disturbing conversation earlier this week. I just read the Bill Clinton profile in Vanity Fair, and so I was talking to somebody who will remain nameless, who knows Clinton, and who said, well, you know, I've never met anybody who could do a better impersonation of relating to people and being relational with people than Bill Clinton. But the more that you got to know him, the more that you wondered whether there was anybody at all inside there, and if so, who that person was. But on the one hand, he seemed completely engaged with the people around him. But the more that you got to realize, the more that you got to know him, the more you came to realize that that was a completely kind of mechanistic persona that he'd set up to deal with the world, and that it was almost impossible to see the person behind that, if there was one.
And what I found disturbing about this conversation is that, except for the part about relating to people around him, which, of course, doesn't have anything to do with... But I begin to wonder whether I have any actual identifiable inner reality, whether there is, you might say, anybody home. Mm. Well, do you have, I mean, you've worked with me for many years. Do you feel like there is somebody in here?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there is somebody in there.
Phew.
I didn't elaborate on that. I just said there's somebody in there.
I'm not insisting it be a nice person.
I didn't say it was nice or wasn't nice.
I'm not insisting it be a warm person. I'm not insisting. But I'd like to think that there is some kind of structural entity inside me that mm-hmm. we could identify as an identity, as opposed to just this kind of shifting random set of neural firings that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something there.
I like to feel that I have a self. But I can't really say with any confidence that I do. But on the other hand, if I don't, then who's worrying about this right now? It seems to me I'm worrying about it. I'm wondering and worrying whether I have a self. Well, how could I be wondering and
exactly.
worrying about that if I don't have a self?
If you didn't have a self, you wouldn't be concerned about it at all.
Unless there's just kind of fragment, this little piece of self shrapnel that's beating inside me, you know, that's kind of pulsing out this dim set of rhythms, wondering whether there's anything more than the little piece of shrapnel feels itself to be. Oh, I'm deep. Man, I'm deep. Don't you think I'm deep? Our numbers are 522.
Something's deep.
Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. You know, are you going to go see Troy? Are you going to go see the movie Troy?
Probably not.
You don't think so?
No.
Mm. 2.5 hours long. A laugh a minute, sir.
It looks it.
I just discovered there's actually a book called by somebody named Dean Hammer, published by the University of Oklahoma Press, called The Iliad of Politics, The Performance of Political Thought. And it is sort of interesting to think about the Iliad. I mean, I think one of the things that it says is they needed a UN even more than we do. Because, I mean, you know, this is a war that's not even about weapons of mass. This was the war basically about booty of mass destruction. I mean, if it's about just, you know, carjacking Menelaus's wife, Helen, you know, they need some, those people needed some help with conflict resolution. Those people needed an ability to, you know, they needed Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter could have put the pin back in this grenade. I guess that would be the wrong. He could have taken the point off this spear, you know? He could have thrown the brakes on some of those chariots. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
Yeah? He could have dropped anchor on some of those triremes. But they have, like, almost no, you know, they had no ability to resolve these things. I mean, you have one marriage that goes south, and, you know, pretty soon you got 1,000 boats in the water.
You know what always fascinates me?
What?
Is you sit here and you talk about several different mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
And I think they're mostly interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, well, he's gone now, but you get a call about something.
Car inspections?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they wanted. That's what they think, well, he wouldn't be talking about whether he's got an inner self or not if he had a really good time there. So that's what they think.
Oh, I see.
I want to know what Dave has to say.
David.
I probably don't want to know what Dave has to say.
David on the cell phone.
David.
Hi.
Hi, David.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, if you guys ever concerned about...
I'll let you pick.
All right. Fred in a car. Fred.
Hey, guys. The reason that most so-called conservatives are not filled with self-loathing is because, by and large, they're almost completely without any sense of social conscience whatsoever. They're today's social Darwinists. They believe that God has ordained that the successful become successful and that they truly can be successful if they just work real hard, as opposed to those people who truly believe that the really, really successful people have an in. They're you know, they may be like George Bush, inheritors of great wealth, which had absolutely nothing to do with personal achievement.
Actually, I know conservatives who are filled with self-loathing. Actually, I have friends who are conservatives. That's the kind of conservative that I tend to be friends with. And it is, I wonder about this self-loathing thing. I think it cuts across. I think self-loathing and lack of self-loathing cut across political boundaries. But I, in general, find that the people who lack self-loathing are the people who need it the most. Anyway, thanks for calling. Think about that. Do you have time for Ken?
That's profound.
Yeah.
Only if we do it terribly quickly.
Ken, can you discuss the end of civilization in 30 seconds?
No, you're not even there
anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
All right, okay.
You just said Ken
cell phone, end of civilization.
Yeah.
And it seemed like something we should get on the air pretty quickly in case it really was the end of civilization.
Yeah.
But maybe we actually have some time to take calls in the next segment. So coming up around maybe 4:39, 4:40, we'd be happy to take your phone calls again, particularly about the end of civilization as we know it. Thank you, Moe's. We're back. Okay, now we have Ken. He's about ready to talk about, I guess this is actually the decline of Western civilization as opposed to the end of Western civilization.
All right. Ken in a car. Hi.
Hey, Bruce. Hey, Colin. How you doing?
Fine.
Good. Here's the question that I've pondered often, and maybe you can shed some light on it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we to be mere spectators to the decline in Western civilization or active participants?
And can you help define your terms a little bit or give us examples as to...
No, it's one of those rhetorical questions, I think.
All right.
I think that you have to decide that you're going to actively participate in the decline or you're just going to stand back and watch it.
You could resist.
I'm sorry?
You could resist. See, that's why we need to define terms, because we have to figure out if we were going to try to resist the decline of Western civilization, what would we do? And in order to know that, we'd have to know what constitutes the decline of Western civilization.
I see where you're going.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll go see Troy this weekend, which is about sort of more like the beginning of Western civilization. And that may help us understand.
Indeed.
All right, bye. I think you had more questions than answers, that fellow. Let me just say this, though. I actually do think, and I'm almost serious about this, although I haven't seen the movie yet, so I don't really know, but if it's anything like the Iliad on which it is based, Troy might be a fairly useful thing for Americans to see right now. It would have been an even more useful thing for Americans to see like a year ago. Because here's why. I can't wait to take that call. Bruce, best man win? Well, we'll have to find out what that is. Here's the thing about Homer, okay? I think one of Homer's big questions in writing the Iliad, a lot of his big questions have to do with the same questions, like, when do you go to war? What's a good reason for going to war? Is it possible that you could go to war and win and yet kind of wreck all of your various personal relationships so much that you would have been better off just not doing it in the first place? Let's see, what are some other questions? But more than that, you know, to whatever extent that we look at the Bush administration now and we see that it's not one thing. It's Bush, it's Cheney, it's Rummy, it's Colin Powell, it's Wolfowitz, it's Armitage, it's Condi.
Ashcroft.
It's a bunch of people with differing agendas who are constantly sort of, you know, working out their own relationships as they meanwhile try to conduct a war. Which is exactly what goes on in the Iliad. You know, you have, I mean, I can't really very easily assign roles to people. I mean, I guess Bush is Agamemnon or something like that, but dumber. I'm sorry. I just couldn't help myself.
You young man are unpatriotic.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is sort of a good, I mean, it turns out to be a question that people have been pondering for a long time, not just since Vietnam, but, I mean, literally for thousands of years, people have been kind of wrestling with the whole question of what's a good reason to go to war, and if you are going to go to war, you know, what's a good way to conduct yourselves while you're going to war? The Greeks were obsessed with a term called themis. Themis, translates roughly to justice, but not exactly. It's more like sort of the ideas of law and orderliness that are kind of not written down, because themis actually dates back to a time before there was written law. But to the idea that even before the laws were ever written down, there was sort of a general understanding in any society about what was right, what was the right thing to do, what was the right way to behave, what's a way to behave that contributes to order and peace, I guess. Not exactly peace, obviously, because people are always waving their swords around. But you know what I mean, basically. What's the right way to act so that good people don't get screwed and bad people get what's coming to them? And so when the Greeks are having all their little debates about what they're going to do, and Achilles is, you know, getting uppity, and how are you going to mend those relationships, and whose honor has been impugned, and stuff like that. What they're really sort of asking themselves is, where's the Themis? It's like, you know, where's the beef? Where's the Themis? That's what they're trying to figure out.
All right. Here is John in a car.
I'm telling you, we should give college credits and stuff for listening to this show. Yeah. Some days, it's just a lot of drivel. I'm the first to admit that. But there are certain days when you can actually learn something
sparkling
by listening to the show. Yeah.
Yeah. John?
Well, hello, my friends. How are you? Colin, that old habits die hard. And as we speak now, I'm driving to Hartford to propose marriage to Ann Coulter. And I was wondering if you'd be my best man.
I thought you wanted Bruce to be your best man.
No, I want you to be my best man, and I want you to get up and give the toast at the wedding, because I think it would be very funny.
I think any wedding involving Ann Coulter would be sort of funny, but I don't think Ann Coulter likes me. If she even knows who I am, remember she was on the show a million years ago. I think it was when she was thinking about running against Chris Shea.
Yes, she was.
She was on the show way back before she was as famous as she are now.
So how about it? Are you? Would you be?
First of all, she's not going to marry you.
She's not?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I don't want to dash her hopes, but I'm sure she gets marriage proposals all the time, from deranged ideologues who think that she, you know, means more than a third of what she's actually saying anyway. I mean, but you know, if you do get married, have a great life. I mean, I like when conservatives are happy. I want conservatives to be happy. I want them to have fruitful marriages and, you know, tons of sex and, you know, be too tired to cause trouble for the rest of us. But I don't want you to be unhappy. So.
Are you going tonight?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be a great event, and I'm very proud of the Connecticut Forum for putting together something like this. And I've been involved with the Connecticut Forum for years, and I've moderated more of them, I think, than anybody else ever has. But you know what? It's just, I said this at the beginning of the show. It's like Sugar Ray Leonard going to watch boxing at Foxwoods or something. It's like, you know, I mean, I just already, I don't equate myself to Sugar Ray Leonard or anything like that, but it's what I do all day is just, you know, back and forth political stuff and debating and you know. It's Friday night. I want to go watch Brad Pitt, you know, carve people up with his sword. I want to watch Brad Pitt run around in a man skirt. I don't want to watch Coulter and Franken go at each other like a couple of attack dogs. It's just too much like the rest of my life. But have a great time.
Thank you.
I hope she says yes.
Even if
she doesn't marry you, I hope she has sex with you.
Okay.
Okay.
On stage?
Oh, I don't know. That certainly would help subscriptions to next year's Connecticut Forums if something like that were to happen.
They got a dull one coming.
Actually,
they could always throw this.
Yeah, that's the theme of the next one.
Yeah.
The sex on stage. And they're doing that next season at some point. No, I don't know. You know, I mean, I hope he gets busy with Ann Coulter. That will probably make him very happy, and it might even make her happy. And, you know, if they're happy, they probably have less time to be dropping bombs on people. Call 1-800-953-1080. Don't call our talk lines. Don't call our talk lines. Call 1-800-953-1080. That's the only way you're going to win. And it's Paul Anka, who wrote and recorded many, many of your favorite songs, including Hey Little Sister, What's Your Bicep With?
Worked out well.
What's your buzz?
Worked out well telling people not to call the talk line.
1-800-953-1080. The rest of you are idiots.
It's not, that may be true, but it's a waste of time. We're not even going to answer those phones for that.
We're not taking those calls. Yeah, exactly. I was just reading this article here about the concept of becoming carbon neutral. The idea being that one of the ways that you can sort of look at your lifestyle is how much carbon it emits. How much CO2 actually releases into the atmosphere. The average person, and these figures are from the National Resource Defense Council, Future Forests, and I forget where else. The average person in the world emits every year 4 tons of carbon dioxide through his activities.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Americans, the average Chinese person emits 2.25 tons, so less than the average person.
Why is that?
Because they don't have as many things that they do that create. I mean, I'll give you some examples in a second. So average person, 4 tons. Average Chinese person, 2.25 tons. Average American, 22 tons of CO2. Well, driving an SUV all by itself.
I see. I'm sorry.
It's not just
I thought it was an
individual. Breathing and,
okay.
It's not just breathing and farting.
Oh.
No, I'm talking about sort of how much you're spewing out just through your activity.
I get it, yeah.
So driving an SUV makes 5 tons of carbon dioxide right there. If you drove it 10,000 miles per year, getting 18 miles per gallon, the total cost of the environment in terms of CO2 emitted would be 5 tons right there, which is a ton more than the average person puts out in the average year with everything that he does. But even like making CDs, for example, if you make 10, making 10 CDs, emits 34 pounds of carbon dioxide. So there's various things that, you know, that we do that, you know, and in fact, well, never mind. But you can sort of change your own habits and stuff like that so that you're not, I mean, probably the best thing you could do would be drive a more fuel-efficient car or stop setting forest fires. That would be another thing. Because obviously if you're destroying trees absorb a lot of the CO2. That's a bad thing to do.
In a recent
NCAA study of football gambling, 1.1% of college football players said they had taken money to play poorly. Players from Rutgers and Penn State said they had done it for free. It's time for Sport d'Artois, the very French sports discussion segment. Except that there's four of us, but that's a problem. Victor Kat, with Mademoiselle Gary Schoenberg, Mr. Ambrosio, Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
That's nice. People from Rutgers will be very happy with that.
You can go meet some
slow day.
Go meet some more people.
Slow. By the way, the Kupac kid, I was talking to him in the newsroom after I explained to you who he is. He was a little disappointed at the rough treatment. But then I told him, I said,
rough treatment?
I said, look, when Bruce, well, he's kind of a sheltered kid from Wisconsin. I said, look, when Bruce and Colin bring you up on the big show, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I said, you should feel pleased with that. Francis, on the other hand, Francis has declared war. On you, yeah.
Because he's
got
an attitude.
There's a real
threat. He's got an attitude.
He probably does, but that's what makes him the top flight newsman that he is.
Yeah. So we'll do the Ask Mr.
Yes,
Mr.
Let's do that.
In the next segment.
Sure, that's
fine. And perhaps even Gary Schoenberg will assist you.
I could use assistance.
In crafting.
I could use a fine assistant.
anyway, why don't we take our break now? Well, if you're scared of going to the dentist, I've got a great solution for you. Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld, that's right, Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld right there at Avon. He specializes in people who are afraid of the dentist. He's so dedicated to making your experience very comfortable. He provides headphones. You bring in the music you like. What kind of headphones, what kind of music do you like, Schoenberg, if you're having a dentist? Going to the dentist, what kind of music would you want to listen to while he's working on you? What
are they?
Well, the commercials.
No.
Well, that's what the commercial's about. It's about people like you who hate the dentist.
I know, yeah, and he's supposed to make
and he's
you
gentle
love
and he's kind and he caters to cowards like you. And we'll listen to Inagata DeVito. Welcome to the comfort zone. No drill, no noise, no numbness. He's going to use a water laser while he works on you, so it's not going to be noisy.
I'm not buying it.
And you're not supposed to say, I'm not buying it while we're doing commercials.
Oh, that sounds
great. Do I go
great
over to ESPN and say, I don't like Nikes very much. They're made by poor people in other countries. Want me to say that during your commercials? All right, over 20 years of teaching and hands-of-the-mouse experience. Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld, you just catered to cowards. He's got the water laser, which makes it even more comfortable. No drill, no noise. It's nice. Exceptional dentistry, maximum comfort, bridges, crowns, stitching, bonding, doesn't matter. Your care and comfort is the chief priority for Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Call 674-0707 for an appointment for the smile you've always wanted in a warm and relaxed environment that spells success. Mills Insurance is accepted. Located in Old Avon Village on Route 44. And Avon is a sign with a silver toothbrush. Easy parking and evening hours. Dr. Jerry,
maybe if you switch your name to Magdalena, it'll help your career.
Very possibly.
Not
I don't know if you're talking to me or her. Dr. Jerry.
I actually hope to get through this entire.
The dentist who caters to cowards, call today or the commercial will still be going tomorrow at this rate. Call 674-0707. All right, we're back. We have an extended version of Sports 12 plus 1.
That's the kind of music I want at the dentist.
All right. Thrash music?
Yeah.
Kerry Schoenberg, bitter.
To make it even more miserable than it already is.
Is with us. Mr. Ambrosio is still here with us because we have to do the Ask Mr. Ambrosio question.
And because he likes the company.
That's right. And here it comes. Dear Mr. Ambrosio, why is there no Q on the telephone keypad?
You know the answer to this.
Well, because keypads were originated in Lithuania. No?
Right. Exactly. Lithuanians don't have the letter. Q is one of the four letters that Lithuanians don't have.
Sure.
In their alphabet. They don't have Q. They don't have K. They don't have Z. And interestingly, they don't have A, which makes it hard. And we've worked with Lithuanian people over at ESPN Radio. In fact, some of them have been on the air. And when they try to convert things to English, it's a little embarrassing.
Really
because
is.
Without those letters, but as Carrie ascertained quite correctly, being the a brilliant person that she is, Q, one of the four letters. In Lithuania, a lot of people don't realize that Lithuanians were the first people to have telephones with keypads. They were the first, I believe it was, actually, it kind of predated A.G. Bell, as we like to call Alexander Graham. But they predated Alexander Graham Bell. It was probably circa 1706 when in Lithuania they had the first telephone.
Were they able to call anybody or did they just have the telephone?
No, they just had the telephones. They couldn't actually do communications until 1982.
But they really haven't made much in the way of upgrades since.
No, they haven't. In fact, if you see a Lithuanian keypad, you wonder how they ever get their messages across. But no, Q, one of the four letters that is not in, that does not even translate from the Lithuanian alphabet to our...
And there's no A either.
Yeah. No, which, you know...
So if like the people at ESPN or Lithuania want to talk about Oakland's baseball team...
Auckland.
Yeah.
Auckland.
The Oakland...
Right. Oakland.
They just...
No, they don't have a... They don't... And they plus just, the other thing... But it's funny you said that because the Lithuanians don't like nicknames either. So they never refer to the team as the A's. It screws you up when you're talking about, you know, like New York. You're talking Yankees or Mets. But since there's no A in the alphabet, they're always talking about the Mets.
For God's sake, I figured I better step it up.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Well, now let's talk about drunkenness in Ryan, New York while we're at it.
I like that story.
Explain this story to people, because you have it mastered.
Well, I realized you guys had read it when I came to the studio and the lights were off and you were all hiding with the doors locked. Because what happened
day,
was a late night high school drunken party got busted by the cops, and what they decided to do was lock the doors, turn out the lights, and hide from the police who were banging on the windows for the next 3 hours, shining their flashlights in.
This is sort of amazing. I mean, these kids are having an underage drinking party.
These are kids in Rye.
Yeah, there's a noise complaint. The cops show up. The kids turn off the lights and lie down on the floor and stay there for 3 hours. Now, because the cops don't have a search warrant, because there's no...
they at least knew that.
There's no... Well, I think that they knew... I think it proves that they knew a lot. Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
This is Rye, New
York.
They
knew the kids couldn't... They knew the police couldn't come in without a search warrant.
And they...
But I think they could go in.
Well, they can go in for about a million different reasons,
yeah.
but they have to, you know, in a situation like that, they have to have some risk of endangerment or something like that.
Right, or they could have feared that somebody was hurt or that, and then that would have been it.
They were apparently saying things like, you'll never drive again, we're going to take your licenses away, and they tracked down the kids' parents through all the license plates on the cars parked outside, so the parents showed up, and still, not until 3:15 a.m. did they finally open the door and let the police in. Admitting that they thought the police would just go away after a while.
I do think that probably kids in Rye, New York, a number of them have parents who are lawyers, and they probably are also kids who feel pretty entitled. Like, I don't know about you, but growing up, I was so afraid of the police. It would not have occurred to me to do anything other than whatever the police told me to do in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Me too.
But
my parents are both lawyers.
Yeah.
And I still would have done whatever the police told me to do.
But it is also interesting that not only could the police not coax these kids out of the house, then when their various parents showed up, they couldn't get the kids to come out of the house either. So
I think the question is, who are they more afraid of?
Yeah, so,
I said the question is, who are they more afraid of, their parents or the police?
The police.
Or maybe nobody.
But apparently their theory really was that eventually the police would go away. If they just waited long enough, the police would go away.
It's a pretty good theory, but I think
they're basically John Rowland's theory, too, when you think about it.
That seems to be working.